The state of Oregon recently released figures on homeless students in the state. As always, there are eye-opening bits of information in the stack of figures. For one thing, there was another bump up in overall numbers, about 6% more students homeless in the last school year over the year before. For another thing, rural districts have the higher percentages. Of the top five districts in percent of homeless students, four are within our listening area: McKenzie, Mapleton, Port Orford, and Butte Falls. Butte Falls School District has fewer than 200 students, but more than a quarter of them report being homeless. So let's explore what it means to be a homeless student and what can be done for them. The Maslow Project provides services to students homeless, reporting homelessness in both Jackson and Josephine counties. It's based in Medford. Fallon Stewart is the school-based services program supervisor and a guest in the studio with me. Fallon, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much. Good morning.
So can you give us a sense of why homeless numbers are this high?
I think what we're seeing across districts, in some places the number has been consistent for years, and we're seeing some increased reports of homelessness in some of, like you said, our rural areas and other districts. I think what we're seeing right now is a serious lack of available, affordable housing, and this is not something that's new to you know, our attention. I think we're aware of that across the state, that housing is largely unavailable and unaffordable in our area. So we're looking at that. We're also looking at rural areas where maybe employment industry is changing. And so people perhaps are moving out of those areas to places where employment is available, but still housing is not.
I continue to be surprised, though, about the situations with housing. I mean, places where you wouldn't think the vacancy rate would be that low, Coos and Curry counties, for example. I mean, no, outside of your service area, but within ours, and yet still tight housing situations in Butte Falls in particular. Do you provide services in Butte Falls, first of all?
Well, there is a liaison in their district, and so we do coordinate service provision out there. So we work together to meet the needs. We do have an outreach team that can take supplies and information to that area, as it is largely isolated without many resources in that specific community. So we do absolutely work with that district and with those people.
So as you work with homeless students over the years, and we'll get a little history of the Maslow Project in just a moment. I mean, are we noticing that that the trend just continues? Is it pretty much a solid block of people always, or is there some fluctuation there?
I think there is some fluctuation. I think what we're seeing right now that's interesting and different is we're seeing people who may have never faced homelessness before. With the rental market as it is, we're seeing a lot of people who are getting notices to move in 30 or 60 days, and they may have been renting for quite some time, as the homeowners are choosing to sell their homes or need to evict the current tenants to raise the rent, and then kind of just creates this rolling effect. And we see a lot more families who are staying long term in weekly rate motels or staying with other family members for prolonged periods of time and kind of remaining in a homeless situation longer perhaps than before.
And in fact, it seems like there are some barriers to, even if you had places available. I mean, if you've been living in one of these weekly rate motels, you're not generally going to have enough cash on hand for first month, last month, and deposit, right?
Right. And there are social service agencies that can help with that on occasion, but that's correct. I mean, they do absorb a majority of financial resources to stay in that situation. And then what do you do when you go to find a rental? Where's your rental history? You've been staying in a weekly rate motel for, you know, who knows how long, and that doesn't provide the kind of reference that you need to get into a place.
Does that look bad to some landlords to have a weekly rate motel on your list of places you've recently lived?
To be fair, I don't know. I'm not a landlord, but I would say it is a barrier, definitely, to not having. And, well, that's assuming that they can stay in one weekly rate motel for a prolonged, you know, period of time, whereas most do shift motel to motel to motel if that's the situation they're in.
So let's talk about the Maslow Project and how it got started. This is an interesting story that actually starts on the campus of Southern Oregon University, I know, but it gets bigger than that, and let's move into that discussion.
Sure. So Mary Farrell's our executive director, and she started as a school district employee, actually, for Medford Schools, and she was with the school district for quite some time and recognized as the liaison that this need for service provision for the homeless student population just kind of went beyond what one person was capable of. So she started the Maslow Project in an effort to meet the need of the population. plan for basic needs services and case management. So then we partnered and contracted with Medford Schools, and since then we've done that with multiple districts around us. So we're able to provide basic needs and case management to the families that we serve and support.
Now, anybody who remembers their high school psychology should remember a little bit about Abraham Maslow.
Correct.
And your symbol looks like a triangle, but it's actually a pyramid, right?
Right, exactly. So we actually had a client in our lobby, a student who was in a psychology class, who said, what you do here is kind of like the bottom of the pyramid of the hierarchy. And so it just sort of, we said, well, why not? That seems like a perfect name. So we'll call ourselves the Maslow Project.
So the hierarchy of human needs. They
right.
take care of the basic stuff,
needs.
Food, shelter, clothing,
yep.
all that stuff at the bottom of the pyramid, and things like self-actualization at the top of that pyramid?
Exactly. Exactly.
Hence the Maslow Project, where Fallon Stewart is the school-based services program supervisor. We're talking about homeless students around the region and services provided for them. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Maybe some stories to share from your own school district or people you know or situations you have witnessed. We would like to hear from you at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So we can get bogged down in jargon, but we need to mention McKinney-Vento, because
Absolutely.
This is a federal law that actually has a lot to do with the kinds of services that are provided through the school districts.
Absolutely.
And that Maslow Project does help provide on behalf of the school districts, right?
Correct. So every district is required to have a liaison that helps identify students. And the way we do that is at registration and throughout the year, we have a questionnaire that families fill out identifying where they are residing at night. And that helps us understand if they qualify under the federal definition, which is if they're staying in motels or shelters or temporarily with other family members or friends, or in sleeping outside or in their car in a place not meant for human habitation. So what that does is it allows us to identify the students who have the most need and remove barriers. And what the federal law requires is that schools help those students remain in the school they started in, which we call the school of origin, throughout that school year, and as long as they need to while that family is still in transition. So what that does is educators understand that the fewer moves a student has, the more likely they are to graduate. So what this is doing is it's retaining that student in the school they started in. And the law supports that by saying now you have to coordinate to keep that student there through transportation, meeting their basic needs, and helping them stay stable in that environment. So it's kind of where we step in and we help coordinate to make sure no matter where that student might be temporarily staying, that they have a way to get to school, whether that be through the school bus. We get creative with city bus and sometimes even taxi, you know, coordinating efforts to get those students to school, and then making sure that they have access to things like school meals right away, and that there's no barriers to enrollment for homeless families who may not have access to the documents typically required, like a utility bill. If they don't have their own place, they don't maybe have the utility bill to show, or birth certificates, or all this sort of extra paperwork that is a barrier. So we try to remove those barriers and make sure they can enroll and stay there.
So, for example, if the child is in a school in the Medford district and the family has to double up and basically couch surf with friends in Central Point, they
yep.
can still continue going to their elementary school in Medford.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's critical for the social-emotional needs of the student, the educational needs, and it keeps that one thing consistent for the student and the family. Because oftentimes that temporary situation, they could then move to a different location. And if you look at it, most of the families that we work with don't stay in one location for a super long time. Oftentimes that could be four or five, even more places during a school year. So hence the even greater need to remain connected and make sure that student stays in their school.
But is that just for the current school year? I mean, or does it change with the next school year?
So we re-identify every fall to make sure that school district personnel, we tend to think of things on a year-to-year, school year basis. But as we know, like, people's daily lives don't just start and end in September and June. So we want to make sure that student stays in their school of origin until at least the end of that school year. And then we reevaluate where they might be the following school year. And sometimes that means they, stay in that same school for several years.
So what is the greatest service need that you tend to provide at the Maslow Project over and above anything else?
In terms of our basic needs services?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we do always provide clothing, food, hygiene products, and those things are largely we're able to give those things because they are heavily donated items. So those are the things that we constantly provide to families. And in the winter months, obviously, we need more things like blankets and hand warmers. And because we do serve in street outreach as well, we're reaching families and individuals who are very vulnerable in this time of year. So we do provide those items to those folks.
I noticed, too, on the website, too, you're refuting the idea that you're just about teens. It is correct. Much larger than that.
Without a doubt, yes. We do serve families of all types, and our average age of a client is actually 11. So we're looking at full families that we work with. We have people who are just have small infants or even pregnant women, all the way up through our college-aged youth. So it's really a diverse population we serve across the board.
We are talking to Fallon Stewart, who's the school-based services program supervisor at the Maslow Project, based in Medford, providing services to homeless students and their families in Jackson and Josephine County districts. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange, maybe with a story to share of your own about somebody you know who is in school and yet homeless at the same time. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. So how many different districts you've expanded into Josephine County over time, correct?
We have, yeah. We're working on establishing our resources there as well. We do work with Grants Pass High School and Grants Pass School District. We serve Medford, Phoenix Talent, Ashland, and Rogue River, and we coordinate services with the other districts as well. So those are the districts that we directly provide McKinney-Vento's support to. But we do serve countywide in terms of who can come to us for resources, support, and case management. We don't turn anyone away just because they don't live in a district that we serve.
First of all, let me ask you just in general terms about, and this is coming back to the count of homeless students in the state of Oregon, the census for the 16-17 school year. Any surprises in the report just based on the raw numbers or the percentages you've seen?
I think we consistently see kind of similar things over time when we're identifying students. I think what you'll see if you look at the numbers, Central Point was a little bit up this year, Rogue River a little bit, and like these are pushing out into the more rural areas in terms of who attends in those districts. So I think what we're seeing is a direct reflection of what's going on in our community and in our counties in terms of where housing is available and where it's not.
And I noticed it is a very rural thing. I mean, I mentioned that of the top five districts by percentage of homeless students, four are in our listening area. And then of the top 20, there are 11. And we're talking, some fairly small districts like Central Curry, which is the Gold Beach School District, the Riddle School District in Douglas County. Rogue River, you mentioned you provide services to, is in that top 20 list as well.
Mm-hmm.
Are there particular tricks to it's not a trick thing, but I mean, particular obstacles to trying to provide services to families in rural communities where there's not a lot of infrastructure?
Absolutely. And I think one of the ways we've gotten creative is we have really tried to develop a robust outreach team. So we are able to go to those places, meet with families. We have a couple of vehicles now that are able to make it into more difficult locations. And we have a team that's specifically there to provide basic needs resources to those communities that have limited resources and limited even service providers to talk to about what's going on in their specific circumstances and what their needs are. So we're really trying to make sure we're identifying those families and serving them in creative ways.
Vehicles that get you into difficult situations. You're talking four-wheel drive vehicles,
yeah,
to get off into the really,
yeah,
off into the woods.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Yeah. And just reliable to get us there, that are larger so that we can carry things. We do carry a Wi-Fi hotspot because one of the big issues there is cell service or internet service to be able to kind of search for employment or search for housing in a way that is available right now. Like, you're going to be looking on the internet for housing, you're going to be looking on the internet for jobs. And a lot of our families who are in homeless situations don't have access to that. So, and for our staff to be able to make referral phone calls and things of that, like while we're out there.
You mentioned earlier the idea of not having a utility bill to show if you don't have a home, for example. But it seems like some of the barriers that used to exist, it's like, well, I can't get a job because I can't show that I have an address and a phone number. The whole thing with the phone number is less of an issue now, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so are some of those barriers somewhat lessened over time?
I think we get creative to help families remove that barrier. So, like, if a family needs an address, we can be that address for them. We can receive mail and be able to bridge that gap to the best of our ability. Now, in terms of enrolling in school, families can use the school's address. They actually can provide the address where they're staying and without having to show any kind of proof.
So let's talk about some of the subcategories in here. As we look at the students who report homelessness in the state of Oregon, there's K-12 sheltered, K-12 doubled up, K-12 hotel motel, K-12 unsheltered, K-12 unaccompanied. Mm-hmm. Which one tends to be the one you see more than any other in the audience you provide services to?
It's really pretty varied. I think, like I said before, we're seeing a lot more families who are in the shared housing or doubled up category. So remaining in that category for much longer than ever before, just because the housing availability, which we've already talked about, hotel motel, which we've already talked about. I think shelter is one where it's limited. We have only a couple of shelters. When families do qualify for those services, they stay there. And one thing that's interesting is the unsheltered category. Whereas we're looking at what is considered substandard now, people remaining in housing that is just really inadequate to meet their needs. Would that mean they're missing basic utilities? Perhaps there's no heat or they're lacking running water or kind of sustained things over time, like landlords not addressing things like sewer issues or, you know, black mold or, you know, structural damage. So there's that category, which is also considered. And then we have our unaccompanied youth who are not with a parent or guardian for a variety of reasons. And those youth are particularly vulnerable and needing more support.
Just about a minute left here. Is there any sign that there could be a curtailing of this over time? I mean, we'd have to get a lot more houses built, it seems like, in the Rogue Valley.
We do need affordable housing. We do need creative solutions in our housing development. And I think as we're looking forward, we need to address that as a community, affordable and sustainable housing for individuals, and for families.
All right. So the overall number of students homeless in Oregon up about 5.6% from the 2015-16 school year into the 2016-17 school year. The Maslow Project provides services to homeless students in both Jackson and Josephine counties. Fallon Stewart is the School-Based Services Program Supervisor. Fallon, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much.